Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's June 2018, and you're listening to episode 78 of Postmodern Realities. And I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Sarah Geis, who teaches apologetics and ethics at Denver Seminary, where she also serves as the director of the Gordon Lewis Center for Christian Thought and Culture. In addition, she is a PhD student in philosophy of religion at the University of Birmingham in the UK. In the 2018 Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Sarah has written the cover feature article, and it's called Thinking Through Mindfulness, Psychology, Religion, or Both. Sarah, it's good to have you on.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, mindfulness is kind of a big buzzword in our culture right now. I was standing in line at the grocery store and I saw a cover article talking about mindfulness, somebody meditating on the front cover. And it's even made its way into Christian circles. I've seen Christian books come out with mindfulness in the title. So can you describe for our listeners, what is mindfulness? What is that concept?
Well, there are several different ways of understanding it, I think, in pop culture. People use that term a lot, and they very rarely, I think, have a very clear understanding of what it means and what they even mean by it. So sometimes, for example, someone might say mindfulness, and they're thinking of ways of calming down, ways of sort of clarifying the mind, clearing the mind, getting the mind to think a lot more slowly, deliberately, clearly, that sort of thing. There are other people who think of it as thinking cautiously, thinking carefully, that kind of thing. But I think the best definition of what it is most commonly, and at least originally, is to see things as they are or to see things clearly. That is an original Buddhist definition. It comes from the Buddhist word vipassana. And this is kind of the concept of getting your mind transcending what you think is real and grasping what is really real.
So we just, you know, mentioned that I've just seen it kind of around. It's kind of a buzzword. You see it online. And so where is this idea of mindfulness particularly or specifically showing up in American culture?
It is all over the place. You see it in different teams, athletic teams that are kind of doing their training, maybe little off-season kind of exercises. You see it in corporate America in different retreats, things like that. You see it in elementary schools. And then as you mentioned, Melanie, earlier, that you're seeing it in magazines. Time Magazine recently had a massive magazine entirely dedicated to mindfulness. And the whole way through was very much dedicated to different practices, learning about where it comes from, learning about what it does for us, looking at research that it draws from. So it really is, I think, gaining quite a bit of ground in our culture right now.
So why would you say that it is specifically popular? Like we kind of, you're just saying it's gaining a lot of ground, but why would it be gaining ground?
That's a really good question. And I think it's a really interesting one too, because we often in our society right now, I think are all aware of how busy we are and how much is vying for our attention. There are constantly emails that need to be addressed, Facebook messages that need to be answered. We are running by the clock always. We're constantly checking to see what we need to do next, and we need to kind of have a schedule to keep ourselves on track. And we're just constantly worried about what to do and where to be and all of that kind of stuff. And so we're kind of overstimulated. And I think what it what it is saying to us about our culture. That is what the presence of mindfulness is saying to us about our culture, is that we desperately need to slow down. We are seeking some way of calming down, some way of quieting ourselves. We're seeking some way of transcending kind of the monotony and the rat race that we are stuck in right now, and just pausing, pressing pause, taking part in the now, in the here and now, instead of looking ahead, looking to the past, all of that kind of overwhelming stuff.
You know, I think that's so true. I was doing a workout earlier this week, and at the end, I was deciding, oh, I'm going to just do one of these other ones that are stretching. And so I was waiting for the stretching, and I realized as I was going through it, it wasn't stretching. It was like this relaxation thing for like 10 minutes, just, you know, visualizing different things and just breathing in and out and just letting your arms feel heavy and all this kind of stuff. What is this? This isn't stretching. So it's just kind of woven into some even everyday thing when you think about sports, you know, just working out, how, yeah, you know, that it's just part of that. And, but I wanted to ask you specifically because, you know, maybe people are thinking, well, it's just relaxation. Like after working out, wouldn't that be great to just lie on your workout mat and just relax and, you know, imagine a beach or something. But in your title, you specifically say thinking through mindfulness, psychology, religion, or both. And so I want to ask you, is mindfulness religious in any way?
That is a great question. And that's where I think it's very important for us to figure out what we mean when we say mindfulness, when we're using that term, because there are a lot of organizations, a lot of schools of thought, a lot of maybe psychological recommendations that do use a form of mindfulness that is specifically, I think, psychological. And it is simply about trying to calm your mind down, trying to be present in the moment. So for example, there are several psychological approaches, and then I'm very specific about one of them in the article, but the recommendation is simply to observe the small things in front of you. So narrowing down your focus to maybe one thing that you're looking at, that you're near, such as the wood grain in a table, or maybe the different shapes of clouds if you're outside, something like that. And in that sense, the exercise, you do certainly, they do ask you to be careful about paying attention to your breathing and things like that. But it's more of an exercise to train yourself to kind of simmer down, so to speak, because we're so often, just like I've said earlier, overstimulated, overwhelmed, keyed up, and we need to be able to calm down. But then on the flip side of that, you do have a lot of people who will recommend mindfulness, they will teach mindfulness, they will use mindfulness. And what they mean by that is the exercise or set of exercises that cause them to cease being aware of this present world at all, to actually lose or transcend your own identity in favor of actually being able to pay attention to the details such that the parts are the whole picture. So here's what I mean by that. If you're looking at the wood grain of a table and you're just trying to kind of look at, hey, maybe it's a beautiful pattern. Maybe it's a really intricate sort of texture. You're just kind of marveling at it. But then you can go a step beyond that. You can go to the point where you are deconstructing the wood grain so much that it's no longer wood grain. Every little particle is its own thing. It's so microscopic that you've lost track of the big picture entirely. And that is actually one of the ways in Buddhism that you are supposed to be able to detach from this world. You're supposed to be able to detach from individuality, detach from any sort of specific entities in the world, because individuality and things that have any sort of existence means that you're tempted to enjoy them, to appreciate them. And if you can detach from them as they are, then you aren't going to be tempted to care about them, to be attached to them, and or anything like that. So that's where it becomes actually Buddhist. That's where it becomes religious, is when you're using it as a means to detach from the world as it is.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Sarah Geis, who in the 2018 Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal has written our cover feature article, and it's called Thinking Through Mindfulness, Psychology, Religion, or Both. To read her article on mindfulness, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, please visit our website, equip.org. You were just talking about an aspect of mindfulness that's actually religious, that has found its roots in Buddhism. And prior to that, you were talking about ways in which psychology would say we could use mindfulness to help us relax and you know, be less stressed. But is it always religious? Can it be purely secularized? Can people practice mindfulness apart from any kind of Buddhist roots?
I think it can be. I think we have to be really careful, though, because on the one hand, the exercises that we would be using if we're doing mindfulness in a secular kind of context, they do, like I said before, they kind of carry with them the risk of going too far, the risk of deconstructing the whole because you're focusing so much on the parts and you're continually deconstructing the parts down to where they actually lose kind of any reference point. They lose any meaning. So you don't really know what they're about anymore or what they're a part of anymore. So I think that when it's used simply to calm us down, to maybe if you're having, for example, a panic attack and you just want to work on your breathing, because I know that mindfulness can be often used for people with anxiety. And there's actually a lot of studies that have been done on the effectiveness of this, where mindfulness techniques can actually help people with anxiety, with panic disorders, to be able to calm themselves down. But we do, like I said, have to be very careful that we don't actually go so far as to actually dissociate the person or detach the person doing mindfulness from the reality that they're a part of. So as Christians, we need to be really careful that we are in working on slowing down, being present in the moment, all of those sorts of things. We need to make sure that we are always aware that we are meant to be still appreciative, reflective, and present in God's world rather than trying to detach from it in any way. So as long as we're careful there and we sort of set up our boundaries, know how mindfulness can be used counterproductively and just simply do not go there, I think we really can actually use it beneficially in a secular sort of way.
Well, I think a lot of Christians, or maybe even just non-Christians, people in general would associate mindfulness and meditation to yoga. So is mindfulness part of yoga in specific? Because you were talking about Buddhist roots, but normally when I think of yoga, I think of Hinduism. So is it not a correct association, or is there something associated with mindfulness in the practice of yoga?
Yeah, I am actually fairly personally skeptical of yoga's ability to calm you down if you go and really pursue it to its extreme, because yoga gets very difficult for people. And at a certain point, I think that's not really very calm. But I will say that mindfulness, since it's not particularly athletic, it doesn't really involve any sort of physical manipulation other than simply trying to slow down your breathing and control your breathing. I think it's actually a much more attractive way, or maybe even a much more helpful and immediately fruitful way of calming down. So a lot of times people will sort of consider mindfulness and yoga to be in the same category of things that you can do or techniques that you can use to calm yourself down. And I think that's, to a certain extent, that's fair. Mindfulness is Buddhist largely in its origin. Hinduism is what birthed yoga. So like you said, they're not from exactly the same traditions, but they both do involve trying to work on your breathing, trying to work on your mindset. But again, I think going back to the secularizability, I suppose you could say, of mindfulness, I think it's easier to do than yoga, because with yoga, the goal is actually to put your body in positions that it's not made to be in ultimately. And it's harder with yoga, I think, to do that, like I said, in a way that is purely peaceful, purely secular, because the whole goal is to, like I said, transcend the body, push your body past what it's supposed to be able to do. Mindfulness doesn't really, at least in its sort of beginner form, introductory form, it's not really set up to do that. It's not set up to push you past a certain point physically, physiologically, mentally. It's meant to just simply quiet you down. So I think there is a connection to a certain extent in the sense that they're both meant to alter your mindset. But I think that mindfulness is a little bit more basic, more simple, more fundamental in some ways, and certainly easier to do than yoga.
I do want our listeners to know that several years ago, our late editor-in-chief, Elliot Miller, wrote a very in-depth, more than 20,000 word series of articles on yoga and why Christians should not practice yoga. So if you would like to read those articles along with the various different types of yoga that he goes into detail on, as well as the history of yoga, please go to our website, equip.org, and you will find them there. So I guess there's a sense in which mindfulness leads to meditation. So how is, you know, a secularized version of mindfulness that's not Buddhist different than, say, biblical meditation? What would be the differences?
Well, this is another one of those words that has a lot of different meanings. When we use the word meditation, it is often used as sort of something that has Eastern connotations. And so what I mean by that is any sort of Hindu or Buddhist meditation involves quieting the mind. It involves calming down. It involves changing your mindset in some way. And biblical meditation, there is an alteration of mindset that takes place. But what we find all throughout the Psalms, we find all throughout Scripture as a whole, that every time someone meditates in the Bible, they are meditating on truth. They are meditating on something that they are aware of that is true about God. So instead of trying to focus on their mind, instead of trying to quiet their mind, change their mindset, anything like that, that's sort of a secondary effect. So the primary effect is simply thinking actively about something that is true about God. So in the Eastern sense, again, the mind and manipulating the mind is primary. In the biblical sense, trying to train our minds and trying to manipulate our minds is secondary, but what's primary is simply knowing God, knowing who we are in light of God. It is truth-centric. We are focused on something outside of ourselves. We're focused on something out there, which is God's truth. So in a way, if we're using mindfulness as a meditation, and we are sort of equivocating or using that term meditation in the Eastern sense, but we think we haven't really thought about it, and we think that we're using it in the biblical sense, I think we're going off the rails. Because if you, again, are biblically meditating, you're not trying to quiet your mind, you're thinking about truth. So we have to be very, very careful what we're actually trying to do if we do anything similar to mindfulness.
So we talked about how mindfulness can be related to Buddhism. There is a Buddhist version of that, and there's also secular versions. But is mindfulness in any way compatible with Christianity? In other words, can Christians practice mindfulness?
I think that they can. I think that we, as Christians, have to be careful to not go down the path too far toward more of the religious side of things. So as long as we are simply trying to calm ourselves down, focus on being present in the moment, stopping to smell the roses, so to speak, is kind of another way to put it, we are going to be, I think, okay. We need to be able to, though, make sure that we are aware, as we previously talked about, of what biblical meditation is, and the fact that we aren't necessarily going to be able to do biblical meditation through mindfulness practices, because the goal of mindfulness is a totally different sort of meditation. So as long as we're not trying to replace biblical meditation with mindfulness, because the word meditation is also used there, I think we're going to be just fine. We just, like I said, have to be clear on what we're trying to do.
Well, in Western society, the prevailing cultural assumption is scientific naturalism. So is mindfulness compatible with that worldview?
This is a fascinating thing to think about, I think, because a friend of mine actually brought this up, Heather Zeiger, who has written for you in the past. And it is interesting how mindfulness has really taken off in a society that does seem to assume that naturalism is true. So naturalism being that all things are matter, or at the very least that all things are derived from time, chance, and physical processes only. So there's no supernatural, there's no immaterial soul that makes sense, that sort of thing. But what's interesting is mindfulness, the research on mindfulness anyway, seems to suggest pretty strongly that we need, as human beings, we desperately need to slow down and to think about something beyond the future, and kind of the, we need to focus on the immediate moment. We need to really start to work on our souls, so to speak. We need to work on kind of meaning, some kind of development of meaningfulness in our lives. And that does not make sense in a naturalistic worldview, because a naturalistic worldview only gives us, if that's true, the only things that make sense are things that help our survival. And what certainly does not help survival is sitting and thinking, or sitting and focusing on maybe wood grain or the texture of carpet or the shape of clouds. That sort of thing in a naturalistic universe gets you eaten. So people who come into existence with a predisposition toward mindfulness techniques or things like that, they're not going to survive very long to pass on their genes. So it doesn't make sense given that naturalistic worldview. It also seems to suggest that there is sort of more to the human person than just survival, than just kind of getting to the next big thing, following our checklist. There's something a lot deeper that's at work there that we need to work on. So whether or not mindfulness actually addresses that successfully or sufficiently, that's another question. But what is interesting is, again, that moving in that direction toward trying to get our souls in order, get our souls right, something internal, that's really fascinating. And I don't think it really is very consistent with our contemporary worldview.
So you open up your article giving an example of just mindfulness being practiced by children in a public school setting. So what should Christians think about some of those kinds of things? I know that you've told us that it's different than yoga, and sometimes people are practicing yoga in schools with children. But what about mindfulness techniques in the classroom?
I think here is where parents need to be very proactive, because if it is the case, which it is the case, that mindfulness has two different branches, it has the more religious branch and the more psychological branch. And it's equally true, which I firmly believe this, that most people who engage in mindfulness techniques are conflating those two, are blending those two. Then what we need to be aware of is that if we have children or no children in the public school setting, we have to realize that they're going to probably encounter this blend, this possibly even full-blown religious mindfulness. And if that's the case, we need to sort of help give them some tools to navigate that, to understand that, to say, look, there's something good in what mindfulness is trying to do. It's helpful to calm down. It's helpful to sit and reflect and think about what's in front of you, that sort of thing. But then we can also teach them that it's a problem to try to detach from the world, because the Buddhists would say that the world leads to suffering inevitably. But Christians say that God created the world as good. He created a good world. Yes, there's the fall too. There are bad elements in the world. But because there is also good in the world, we don't need to fully transcend the whole world. We need to actually just slow down to appreciate the world. So appreciation is different than transcendence. And that's a very basic thing that I think some kids can get. Now, transcendence, you're going to have to redefine that according to the kid. That's a pretty big word for even adults in some ways. But in a way, we have to teach them that they can use these mindfulness techniques for the good of sort of their development, for toward their Christian development, instead of trying to simply sort of put a pause, press the pause button on their own humanity and their own existence. So I think there, like I said, we just need to help students, help kids, help our children really be able to understand that not all mindfulness is healthy, but the gist of it maybe can be worked with and can be tweaked, and they can kind of do their own version of it, or reflect on, maybe we can give them tools to reflect on or things to reflect on when their teacher brings up mindfulness. So I think it's not necessarily a bad thing that it's going on in public schools, but I do think we need to be fully aware of the fact that most people who are leading kids through it aren't going to have a very nuanced understanding of what it is, and they certainly are not likely to have a set of Christian worldview principles guiding them.
So just thinking about Christians who want to practice mindfulness personally, or maybe incorporate it into their ministry, how do we interact and maybe caution fellow believers who are wanting to really engage with mindfulness?
I think it's similar to the situation where we have kids in public schools facing mindfulness. We need to know that it is out there. We're not going to be able to squash it. We're not going to be able to turn it off in pop culture. It's going to run its course, so to speak. So it's there, whether or not we like it, whether or not we want people to do it. But what we can do is we can be loving. We can say, I recognize that you're feeling the need to calm down. So since mindfulness is all over the place, we can help teach people that that's okay, but they need to be very discerning about which mindfulness teachers they learn from or which mindfulness techniques they use. Because I think often the problem is that on the one hand, we don't know enough about the pop culture techniques that we're using. But then on the other hand, we don't know enough about the Christian worldview to recognize what is inconsistent with it. So we need to teach people what is biblical meditation, what is biblical prayer, what is sort of the big story of Christianity. What are we here for? What are we supposed to be as humans? What does it mean to be Christ-like? That sort of thing. Because if we answer those questions and can help train people in those big Christian worldview theology questions, then I think they will be to a certain extent immune to the more antithetical pieces of mindfulness. They're going to use the good and be immune to the bad, essentially. So in a nutshell, I would say it has to do with Christian education, with being loving, recognizing that we are going to be around people who don't know as much as we do, but that's why God uses us as vessels. It's so that we can help teach, so that we can help instruct, and we can help guide people.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for Sarah. So Sarah, it's summer and the temperatures are rising. So smoothie or frozen yogurt?
Oh, good question. I would say smoothie. It's just a little more, I like the consistency better, I think. A little more interesting.
Are you an early bird or a night owl?
Oh, I'm an early bird. I have to get up and feed horses.
Call or text?
Definitely text.
Are you an introvert or extrovert?
I am an introvert who likes people.
Well, it's summer, so what would you do on your ideal vacation if money was no object?
That is a good question. I would say I would probably want to go on a river cruise through Europe.
Ooh, that sounds very interesting. Well, thanks, Sarah, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Today's guest is Sarah Geis, who in the 2018 volume 41, number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal has written our cover feature article, and it's called Thinking Through Mindfulness, Psychology, Religion, or Both. To read her article on mindfulness, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, go to our website, equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888- Ask Hank, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.